Hello and welcome to the Like a New Day podcast. My name is Zachary Brannigan. I'm a photographer based in Michigan, and this show is all about photography, creativity, and Leica cameras, so stay tuned. Well, here we are. It's a couple weeks now since I put out that first half of our interview with Justin Mott, and I've gotten a lot of good feedback, and it's been really a lot of fun to hear what you guys all think of Justin, because I think Justin's a riot, and I think he's a pretty cool guy, and it's just interesting to hear about somebody who's using our beloved Leica cameras out in the field in the way that he is. So we do have quite a bit of content left with Justin, and I don't want these episodes to be too long for you, so I'm not going to spin my wheels too long here. I'm going to get out of the way and let you experience the whole Justin Mott. The second half of this interview is fantastic because he really goes deep into his personal project, and really, I think this part of the episode, or I should say this part of the interview, is really going to be fascinating for everybody, in that it is very much about the passion for photography that Justin has, the interesting work that he is doing, and it's a lot about creativity, focus, and his personal approach to photography. So news from my end, not a whole lot. It's been really busy at work, at my day job. We're just trying to wrap everything up before the frost hits. When you're in a conservation organization, there's a lot of work that needs to be done before the season escapes you. And believe it or not, we are heading deep into fall here, and pretty soon we're going to end up with frost on the ground, and you know, that makes it difficult to get some of our work done. So we are trying to wrap up, and I've been working around the clock, and it's fundraising season, etc., etc. I am going to have some camera news to update you on. Probably in the next episode, I'm going to go a little bit deeper. We do have Taylor coming on. I did an interview with Taylor. You know all about Taylor from previous episodes if you've been a listener for a while now. So it's going to be kind of cool to introduce her to all of you because she's kind of been a big part of what's going on here. So that's going to be great. So next episode, you can stay tuned for that. And also, I think what I'm going to get into in that episode from a technical perspective, a photography perspective, is I'm going to talk about third-party lenses for the L-Mount Alliance, because I've had a lot of great experiences with some L-Mount Sigma Art lenses since we spoke last, and I'm going to talk about those a little bit, and you know, kind of the psychology around third-party gear meshing with our beloved Leica system. So without further ado, I'm going to step back from this, and we are going to bring in Justin. So stay tuned.
That's the sad thing about some photographers, is they get into it to do these projects. And realistically, like, I get it. It is hard to do. And no one's paying you to do black and white documentaries or photographing, you know, to spend 8 days on doing a story about the last two northern white rhinos. There's only a couple people that are doing the story. Mm-hmm. So, but at the same time, what you can do, I think, as a professional photographer, and even if you're doing a different career path where you're generating income, if you're doing more wedding stuff, and that's fine, and but you're not, like, truly passionate about it, it's just setting aside time for a personal project, whether you're pro, whether you're amateur, whatever genre you're in, if that's what you love to do, it's so important. That's the big mistake I made, is 10 years went by in between big projects. But to find a project again that you're passionate about and care about, that's important. So I always say, like, put aside some of that time, because it's not just that you're shooting what you love, you're also growing, because you're not growing much when you're getting paid to shoot, right? If I'm on an assignment for the New York Times and I've got 2 days to do it, I can't spend one of those days just like, oh, I'm going to experiment with this 50 millimeter and shoot everything slightly moody. And like, I just can't. Like, I can leave a little time. But when I'm doing my personal project for 8 days, I can try something different. I can slow down. I can think more. I can experiment. And that's what personal projects are great for. Again, it's like a workshop. It's not the work that you're necessarily going to produce in the moment, but it's, you're going to take away new lessons. You're going to experiment. You're going to grow. You're going to evolve as a photographer. And most importantly, it's going to, like, I'm a huge advocate of personal projects, if you haven't noticed already.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's just good for your soul, and it's a good reminder of why you fell in love with photography. Because a lot of times people that, you know, some people just like the technical aspect, and those people are that I respect that in their own way. Like some people just like awesome with multiple lighting systems or doing product photography at a different level, and they like figuring that out, and they like the lighting and trying to figure out that kind of stuff. But some people just kind of fell into a niche of photography because that's what they get paid to do, but they really fell in love with storytelling. So if you fell in love with storytelling and you got away from it, just set aside time to do it. People think you have to go out to some exotic land, which I've been doing recently, but you don't. I mean, there are projects you can do in your own house, projects you can do around your neighborhood. You don't have to go too far to sort of spark yourself creatively. There's stuff out there. You just have to treat that discipline like you did when you first started, or treat it like the discipline you do with your work. So that means set aside a time every day, like once a week or twice a week or whatever you can do, you know, but make it a discipline, make it something that you have to actually do. And you will have ups and downs just like anything else, but you'll thank me and you'll thank yourself later on for doing it, because it's so great for your growth. Personal projects are so important.
Well, tell me a little bit about, I know you've probably got a busy day ahead of you in that. So, but I would love to hear more about Kindred Guardians a little bit, like how that came about and, what sort of leads you got and the pathway into that project a little, because I think people are going to really want to go check it out. The things you've done so far, I mean, it's really remarkable.
Well, thank you for saying that. And thank you for the opportunity for letting me talk about it. I started in documentary photography, like I mentioned, and doing personal projects. And that's what we did at school. I went to San Francisco State University, and our professor wrote the only textbook that I'm aware of at the time that had multiple volumes about photojournalism, about documentary photography. So I got quite lucky. It was a cheap state school. I lived there for enough time so I could qualify for state tuition. And he just really I was like, wow, this is interesting. He really pushed us to do these long form stories. And I became quite fascinated with that. And that's where I really fell in love with photography. As my career evolved into doing New York Times assignments, then doing commercial work, I stopped doing personal projects. It was just, there was time. I just didn't allot time. That's what I like to say, because there always is really time. But I didn't put aside time to do that. A couple things happened at once for me. It was always in the back of my head. I was thinking about, what's a good project? What's a project I grow into? What's something that I can do for more than a week? What's something that's important to me that I'm going to follow through with? And as I was sort of getting sick of doing my TV show, because that was kind of eating up a few months of my life. We filmed in 6 different countries. And that was the time, in between my commercial work that I would probably be doing a personal project. And I did the show for 5 years, and then all the obligations that went along with that, the Canon events and the press tour for the show, it was a lot. So as that was coming to an end and I was getting kind of sick of doing the show, and the show was going to be done, I think, at the same time, so it kind of worked out great. I was like, okay, now what am I going to do with this time? I need to get back to this project. I need to get back to doing a personal project. I always wanted to do something with animals. I'm a wildlife lover. I love animals. I love conservation. Wildlife conservation. And I just thought, well, I could do stories about people that look after animals, because I've always fascinated with those people. But part of me is always hidden from that kind of stuff on Instagram and hidden from those kind of stories, because anything with animal abuse, it really makes me angry and it can really ruin my day. So I sort of hid from that, but I was like, this is stupid. I'm getting older. This is reality. This is what's out there. I need to channel that anger and do something about it and do something positive with my work. And you have this point in your life, for all photographers, I think, or, anything in the creative world, what's my legacy going to be? Is it going to be my hotel photography? I'm proud of the work I did there, but it's not something I going to have an exhibition about all my great, shots of great pools and spas and stuff. So I thought, well, this is important to me. This is something I want to get back to. I also want to test my skills. I want to see what I can do, because I've accumulated all these new skills with commercial work, with my portrait work, even the time I spent doing wedding work and all that. But I've never really put these to use in long form, in 10 years. So who am I now? What are my new skills and what can I learn? So I came up with this idea to just do, photograph people. I left it very open, and I figured I could maybe make it more narrow as time went on, but then I've just been okay with it being sort of broad like this. So I photographed Kindred Guardians, a personal project where I photograph people around the world who dedicate their lives to helping animals. So I just look for interesting stories. And at the time, I had no wildlife stories, so it was really hard for people to be what's your work in wildlife? Because those people, that conservation world, it's they want to know that you're one of them.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of like anything. And it's a big thing. It's trust, because a lot of the work they're doing, and if I'm going to be showing pictures of them getting close, they need to trust that I'm going to put it out there in the right way. So, for me, it was nice because I'm not leveraging the fact that it's going to get published, even though some of this work is getting published. But I don't go into the project promising anything that I can't deliver. I don't promise anything, actually, because my first goal is to get images for this project. Secondary is if I can publish it, I do. And the project has different chapters of the project have been published in the Washington Post, and Nat Geo did a little article about me, and Paris Match and Greenpeace and stuff like that. And that's been wonderful. But I go in with my own money. I do the story my way. And then afterwards, if people are interested in then I publish it. And then I give the images to the organization as a trade. Some photographers get mad and they say, like, you're giving your work away for free. I don't look at it that way. I strongly believe in the value of photographers and their images. But these people didn't come to me. I went to them. You know, this is something I want to provide for them. A lot of them don't have great images, or they don't have like a full story to tell their story. They don't have a full collection of images. So I've just decided, like, I find different stories. I pick the amount of time. I try to find the budget. I try to see what kind of access I can get. And if it all works out well, then I go and shoot it. And then I give them the image afterwards and they use it for different things. So it's great because I can be part of the charity. Like for the Rhino story, they've auctioned off images. And they've made a lot of money from that. And that's great. And it's wonderful. And then I sometimes recuperate my expenses from the story. And that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, never making money off it. But at the end, I want to produce a book with this work. And all of this, because I'm not taking funding from anyone and because I'm not going in like as an assignment for the Washington Post or something like that, I'm doing it myself. I can tell the story. It's always told accurately, but I can tell the story my way. Meaning like if I want to focus on this person and just the work they do with sloths, I can do that. Mm-hmm. If I want to spend 8 days and not one day, I can do that. So it's really been like the most beautiful thing I've ever done in my entire career. I've really found what I love to do. And the wonderful part about it is I don't have to answer to anyone stylistically or even, you know, the direction, the narrative that I want to tell and how I want to tell it. So it's been wonderful because I have spent a decade shooting for someone else's story, whether it be a publication or the writer's story. And that's been fun and it is exciting in its own way. But now I can just chase the stories that I want to chase. And I thought, why not? Why not do this? This is what I love to do. I can afford to do it with the commercial work. And, you know, that's how I look at it. Like, all right, I'm going to do this 5-day hotel shoot, but that's going to be several days of me going to this cool place and doing the story about the animals. And luckily for me, I'm able to help these people get their stories out there. We cross promote on Instagram. You know, I've changed my kind of whole identity on Instagram where I'm posting like wildlife stories and I publish them each as like a series. So I'll publish, you know, images 1 through 25 of a photo story day by day and then they tag. And it's great because I'm now meeting people in this world. Now I'm in the world and now they're referring me to like other stories. Like, oh, you should meet this person. And then once you do that, like anything else, you've just like, oh, you have their blessing because so-and-so introduced you from this German NGO. And that's kind of how it's been happening for me. And then in addition to all these stories that I've been doing, I've also been like, I launched this with the rhino story, the last two northern white rhinos left in the world, the story about the caretakers and the rangers that look after them. But that story now has grown to be its own thing. I've been back once for the surgery, so I've been there 2 times and I'll probably go back again. And I've worked quite closely with the team that's trying to save the subspecies from extinction. So, you know, it's taken me in all sorts of different directions, but the ultimate goal is to make a traveling exhibition to raise awareness about animal conservation, wildlife conservation, and to really highlight these wonderful people that inspire me. And it's been remarkable for me. I've been loving it. As you can see, wow. I haven't shut up about it.
No, that's all right. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable. It's enviable, and beyond impressed. I mean, obviously your images are fantastic. The images that I've seen from Kindred Guardians that you've shared in your, on your socials and on, you know, in your YouTube and that, videos have been really, really something. I've enjoyed them quite a bit and they are very fresh. I mean, I don't see you copying other photographers in your images at all. I mean, you have an original eye, you know, everything from, I just think the focal ranges you're choosing and like the how much you're putting in the images and not, and even some of the ways that I think some of your sort of, I'm assuming in camera crops probably most of the time, but just like what you're, I don't know. I really was pretty fascinated with, like, there was a couple images, for instance, where you're really close on the rhino and, but there are people in the image, but they're sort of bleeding off the edges of the image and stuff, you know, like they're there, it's about them. But like in these particular images, especially when this animal was like clearly in some kind of distress at the point that you were documenting this image, or at least it was sort of an intense day for that rhino, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just like really sort of appreciated how there was a lot going on. There was people in there, but you weren't, it wasn't obvious. It was, I don't know. I found it really striking.
Well, thank you. It's giving myself time for these compositions. That's the great thing. And giving myself time to find the nuances in a story. Like I was just actually yesterday filming a vlog. I do sound like an old man getting into this YouTube stuff, but I've been enjoying it, but I'm trying to figure out a way to showcase my work on YouTube within my channel in an interesting way, not like where I'm just doing a slideshow and talking about it. So I've decided to like this, you know, this new way of like take 6 images from a story, break down kind of 6 images that fit 6 different themes and talk about what I was thinking about. So when I'm doing that, like it just made me think about little things in my process, which are nice. Like, you know, having, if I go out and follow someone for a day, I'm not going to pick up the little nuances that like that's happening in their lives. And I'm not going to be able to, even if I do, it won't be time to capture those nuances. And so I was talking about following this lady in Suriname. We're doing a story about sloths. And I just noticed this little thing, like day two, I'm like, oh, she's always looking up. And I thought that was really cool. Like the obvious shots following this lady in Suriname are going to be her rescuing a sloth, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what she does. But that doesn't happen every day. And so, and that is only good for maybe a few shots. I can't make a 25 picture photo story about that, or even published online, you know, 10 pictures of her just holding a sloth. So I was like, I noticed these little nuances where she's driving and she's looking up. At first, it was just scaring me because I'm like, why aren't you looking at the road? Like,
pay attention to the road, lady. Yeah.
I know that would be a bucket. But I was like, oh, and then I started to look for that more. I mean, those are the cool little things when you allow yourself time, because you just kind of sit back. Because if you're following her for like a full day, people also say, why do you need to be with me all day? Can't you just like meet up for me for an hour? Or if there's a rescue, I'm like, no, I need to humanize you. You know, mm-hmm. It's just like anyone doing a documentary. Like, what do you like at home? Do you have dogs at home? Do you have kids at home? What do you do with your free time? Like, the more I can be let into your life, the same with the guy with your workshop was like do a portrait of this person in their living room, because then you get a sense of who they are. They're mm-hmm. not just a person on the street. You care about that person. In a long form story, you need all these little elements to piece together. So that's been a great thing about this project for me. It's allowed me to go back and do that. So I started to look for her looking up all the time. And I have a couple images in there that work quite well in the story. And I think a lot of people won't appreciate that. But for me, I care more about like the people that are committed to like, they'll look at a 20 picture photo mm-hmm. story, 25 pictures or something like that. And those little things, those little moments, not only do I recognize that, now I can have time to capture it, not just capture it like, oh, that exists, but you know, everything, your details and those little moments like that, you want to capture in great light, great composition. So it's just been truly wonderful for me to be able to slow down, because I've been running around for so many years mm-hmm. and it's nice to see like, oh, I can think and I can craft, and I really enjoy it. And that's why I fell in love with photography in the first place. So it just took me over a decade to get back to that point.
Yeah. I definitely know what you're talking about with wanting to spend time with people. I mean, that makes all the difference. The things that you get when you go back 2-3 times. When I got back from New York, you know, I was hell bound and determined to like start thinking about developing some kind of a personal project that I could, that had nothing to do with my job and nothing to do with my regular life. And so I was trying to think of like, who do I interact with, or where would I have at least some initial access to a culture that maybe isn't, super well understood, something that I felt maybe had a story to tell. And I have quite a few tattoos, and they're all of a very, old fashioned. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And mine are all like American traditional, like a really, old school Sailor Jerry kind of traditional. And there's a subculture of like sort of these like very high level tattoo artists in that particular genre. And the artists, all of mine are from one artist, and he's the kind of guy that doesn't care about Instagram, but he's got, tens of thousands of followers on Instagram, but he's just like, he's like the most interesting guy. I mean, he's like, some people might call him a conspiracy theorist, but he's also like lives off the land, mushrooms, like anything, it's just a big beard and all that, but he's like about my age and that, but he's just like, every time I go there, we always joke about how, you pay for the tattoo, but you stay for the existential wisdom. We have these incredible conversations, right. But his shop is a co-op of like invited artists that he's known, and these guys are excellent. And but they take their craft like super seriously, and their shop is like, but at the same time, their shop is like an extremely welcoming environment, and they're like very, very hippies and very, very like, it's a welcome and it's an open place, because that is a culture that like kind of like hardcore old-fashioned tattoos like that culture is a lot of times it's very testosterone driven and exclusionary. Sure. And there's a high barrier for entry. If you're if you're just kind of a nerdy dude and you walk into a tattoo shop thinking about getting your first tattoo, and you go into some of the shops that are in that culture, you'll probably never get a tattoo because they just don't want to talk to you, where Jeff's shop is not like that at all. So I came back, I kind of approached him, and I said, I have no idea where we go, but I just thought I'd like to just come and, maybe get some access and, photograph your guys at work and stuff just to start. And in my mind, I was like, if I do this enough times and I'm getting connected with these guys, maybe there's, social hour after, maybe that turns into like, hey, why don't you come to the Christmas party, or whatever it is. And then before you know it, it's like maybe over a couple of years, I'm really ingrained with these guys. And it was interesting because I started to learn a lot of the pitfalls of,
the subjects, you know, sometimes were just like, they were collaborating more than I would have liked, you know. At first they were just kind of like, oh yeah, yeah, well maybe it could turn into a book like this. Cause in that particular culture, like books are a big thing, like books of your work
sure.
you put out.
Yeah.
And so they were maybe thinking a little bit like that. Unfortunately, the pandemic kind of railroaded it, but I did get a good number of visits in, and I got a lot of good work, but it's all in the shop, you know? So it's like, I did get to know and take some good portraits. And I think of some of the customers, and I got to know the customers, and I was like, well, the customers are really, really interesting. A lot of these customers.
Yeah.
And so, you know, then I started corresponding with some of them, and these are guys that are traveling around the country to go to a very short list of these artists that are in this subculture.
Wow, yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know if it will be something that I can resuscitate after the pandemic, but obviously, like, tattoo shops were closed for 6 months, you know, in the yeah. States. You know, they were one of the last, because I mean, you got real issues with transmission with when you're doing that
sure.
work. So I don't know, but it's, I don't know. Again, this is the kind of thing, I can talk about this for a long, long time and get all excited about it.
No, it's great to see your passion for it. Yeah. And like, I think people can forget that excitement that they got from it until you're removed from it, you know, mm-hmm. and if you're removed too long, you forget that feeling of what it's like to go back and do that. And then even that little bit, like sometimes it's different, right? But like even just staying in the shop, like after a couple of days, everyone's different, but like there's going to be a point where you're going to stop taking the shots that you already got. And that's when the magic's going to happen. Like mm-hmm. you're going to get your go-to shots because this is new. This is exciting. It's the same when a photographer goes to a new country for the first time, like that first day, you're going to go through your Rolodex of shots. You're going to take those shots. But when do you allow yourself time to be creative and try different things? And then when you're in a confined area like that, like if it's a tattoo shop, you will just inherently get more creative and get more interesting yeah. shots out of boredom, because there will be a point where you're like, okay, you know, shot him tattooing somebody through the glass and that reflection.
Yes.
Got that already. What else can I do? What else? So you just stop and think for a bit. And it's just something you don't normally do as a photographer enough. And so that's the great thing is about a personal project. It's allowing you to do that. And then there are some projects that do have their visual limitations. Like if that's it, that's the great thing about this project. I've gone down many paths where it's like, oh yeah, okay, I've kind of got the shots I'm going to get after a couple of days. Only so many different things can happen at this place. But for my project now and through age and experience, I'm like, well, this is great because each story is so different and I can have a dud. I don't want to have a dud, but I can have a story that isn't great or things didn't happen the way I wanted them to. That's fine because I've got all these other stories that I'm working towards, or even just when I'm doing it for 7 days, I can have a bad day. Like when I was following the lady around in Suriname, that's a long way to go, you know, from Vietnam to Suriname. It was expensive, but, mm-hmm. and I can have a day where she's just kind of doing office stuff and that's what she does. It's not wonderful, but okay. The next day let's get, you know, like,
yeah.
but that's documentary. The more times, the more opportunities. And then the more time I have to be creative and to anticipate and learn new things about the person. Those are all giving me different ideas about what to shoot and telling the story. And then thinking of it as a story rather than as just like one or two individual pictures allows yourself a lot of freedom to try different things as well.
And here you are with an M10D doing this. That's pretty amazing to me. You know, you're pulling yeah. that thing. I mean, that is, it's, you know, my little, quick little odyssey about it. My, one of my most recent episodes was that, my tragic limited time, or, you know, my short tragic time as an M10D photographer, because, I had an accident about, I don't know, 15 years ago and have an eye injury. So I have a hard time with binocular vision. Like, so I have a heavy okay. prism in my glasses, and I'm also a left eye shooter, and it's my left eye that's injured. So it's, you know, so like it was one of those things where it's like, I've held, you know, rangefinders and I've shot with old film rangefinders and that back in the day. And I haven't had one in a long, long time since before that injury. And I really wanted an M10D like for a long time. It was just that, you know, and so I had an opportunity to get one, found it, got a used one. And got it from Leica DC and David Bickley there, who's he's a Leica ambassador and he's an Academy instructor and he also works at the DC boutique. And he's been fantastic. He's going to be on here too at some point. And so he got me this camera and that, and I'm shooting it for a few weeks and I'm just like, I'm struggling because like I really was hard for me to focus quickly. Like I could get focused, but yeah. it was like, it was really, really hard because I'm looking through this like Coke bottle lens on my left side. And actually, if you're not lined up perfectly, there's like a little bit of parallax that's going on when
right,
I turn
right,
my head.
Yeah.
Well, and since I'm a left eye shooter, I'm smashing my nose up against the back of the camera. And like, I mean, it was just like the deck was stacked against me and it was a huge struggle. Like I couldn't get in close enough with my glasses being left eye and having this kind of funky parallax thing going on, the prisms in that lens, where I just couldn't, I just couldn't do it. You know, like I could really concentrate hard and get focus, and I got some shots, but I was working so hard to do like a basic fundamental thing in photography. And
yeah,
I love,
that must have been rough because you were so excited about that camera.
it was heartbreaking. I mean, it was like, it was seriously emotional. Plus for me, it was a big investment, you know, to buy this camera. And I bought a 50 millimeter Summicron to go on it, a brand new one and all that. And so I'm just all excited about it. And it was just like a failure. Well, I'd been communicating a little bit with David at the boutique, like, how's it going? And I'm like, not so good, David. Like, I'm struggling. He's like, and so he's like, well, you know, so we're kind of talking, and then he's like, well, you know, we could always get you a Visiflex, you know, and have the electronic viewfinder. But both of us kind of agreed, it's like, by the time you put an EVF on top of it, it's like, well, then like, why are you with an M10D? Because with a regular M10, you can do live view on the back screen, and then you can do the tourist thing and, you know, hold the camera out in front of you and use the back screen. But I was like, you know, it just doesn't make sense, you know, for me to. So he's like, well, I want to make you happy and all that. And they, even though it was like well beyond what their like return policy would be, especially for used gear, they gave me full credit back for it. And I bought a new SL2. And I bought an SL2 with a M adapter L, and then put that 50 on there because I loved a manual focus. But man, with that 5 million dot EVF in there, and the way
it's a nice camera. Oh, yeah.
God. And it's recessed.
I tried it out actually. They loaned me one to use on a, when I went away on one of my stories, and I did enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I did like the SL. I used the SL1 with the adapter a while back, but I did enjoy it. I just like the M10 better.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, I mean, form factor and stuff, that was it. But you know, once I got the SL2 in here, and you know, some of the improvements that they've made with it, and you know, I have a Q2, and I'm used to shooting with a Q2, and it has a little bit of a recess thing, and the EVF, you know, and if you want to manually focus, you have focus peaking, and it just makes it, and it, you know, auto magnify focus peaking. I've never had a problem with that, but with the optical viewfinder on the rangefinder, it was I don't know. It was funny because, so I was really exploring these issues of like, you know, do you have to love your camera? Cause I could have bought, you know, I had a Fujifilm X100F, for a good long time. And, you know, it's a small rangefinder-esque camera, but it has a EVF that pops up in there, and you know, the pictures were fine with it and everything. And I liked that camera a lot, but man, I really wanted that M10D, but
I'm sure at some point, I mean, photographing animals, I do feel like proud and lucky at the same time that I've been able to do it with manual focus. But I will say it's a big difference in the spectrum because I photographed gibbons, which is really hard. Gibbons are so fast, and I really had to think. But again, those challenges made me get different shots than your average shot. But then a couple months later, when I photographed sloths, it was like, this is the perfect camera. Sloths are moving so slow. Yeah. I've got all the time in the world to set it up. I can have a coffee. I can figure out it's going to be there in about 10 minutes. Passing through that beautiful bit of light, I can set it up.
That sounds great.
So sloths is the ideal camera for manual focus, but
there you go.
You know, I have realized like sometimes I might miss things, but you know, even so, like, okay, I photographed rhino surgery, you know, it's a very stressful moment. So there's two northern white rhinos left in the world. They're doing surgery. They're extracting the egg and then going to fertilize it in Italy. It's a very stressful thing. A lot of people around, and I've got to move around. Not that things are happening so quickly, but you do have to move around. You're working around other photographers and stuff. And I used the M10D for that, and I was very happy with the images, again, because it made me move around more and it made me think more. And as long as I can nail my focus, and I do like to shoot a 1.4 quite a bit sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, I really love that pop that it gives. I like the color that it gives. But you know, I will just sort of like, I'll bracket my exposure sometimes.
Yeah,
that makes
sure.
Sense. Like, I'll just kind of like, shoot a little bit across just to make sure. And I've never had any issues with it. And then I do now that I'm going to be doing more, now that I'm more into this YouTube channel, I'm going to be taking a vlogging camera with me that, you know, it's a Sony A6600. It's funny because I just bought it strictly for video, because I want to do some behind the scenes talking to camera, but also some B-roll. So like, worst case, if I really needed something like crazy fast and I need a lot of focus, I could probably use that. But I don't see it that way. I don't see myself using it that way. I haven't regretted it. I've been, like I said, even photographing gibbons or photographing sort of a news event like the surgery or something that's only happening once and it's happening, you know, and you got to move around people. I've been fine with my cameras, with my light, because I like having the two cameras set up for situations like that, you know, where I have to move a little bit quickly. I can have two different focal lengths. But my regular documentary stuff, you know, that one M10D and the 35, and occasionally throwing the 75 on there when I need it, it's a perfect setup for me.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's a great, a lot of people, you know, I've talked to before, it's like, well, are you like a 28-50-90 guy? Are you a 35-75 guy? You know, like if you're using primes, you know, what's sort of your prime spread? And I was kind of wrestling with that when I was thinking about what lens to get for originally the M10D. And then now, you know, I use it on the SL2. And because I have a Q2 at 28 fixed, I was like, well, you know, 50 makes a lot of sense to me. So, you know, now, especially because the SL2 is essentially very similar sensor to the Q2, you know, I've got a 1.7 on the 1.7 28 millimeter on the Q2, and you've got an F2 50 millimeter on the SL2, and together their photos, they just work together. You know, they look like they were taken together. They both look like me. It's interesting because, you know, your camera to a certain degree, you know, helps define your style, you know, I mean, the lenses that you choose and all those things. I mean, that's a whole other like multi-hour conversation is, you know, developing your personal style as a photographer. You know, I don't know. I'm happy with what I've got there, but I just was blown away. I thought it was so awesome that you were using the M10D for that kind of work. And I will tell you, like I kind of alluded to it earlier, like one of the themes on this podcast has been thinking about getting Leicas into the hands of working photographers more, or like, you know, earlier in their career, working photographers. And like we had I started this podcast, you know, earlier this year, and started to get a few listeners, and it's not huge, but a few thousand listeners now. And the started to get some, you know, listener mail, like emails and stuff. And a young woman who's an EMT in down in the southern United States, she you know, just wrote to me that, you know, she had been working as an EMT for a long time. And I think about 7 years in, she just didn't realize that how much it was affecting her. And she was suffering from PTSD, and she tried to take her own life she tried to take her own life after a really bad day at work. And, you know, she kind of helped rebuild her confidence and, through, being a photographer. Like she, you know, her mom, you know, encouraged her like, well, you've always liked photography. Like we should get you a camera, something to focus on. Cause she was out of work for like quite a while. She had injured herself significantly. So she sort of dug her way out through that. And then she found the podcast through, you know, investigating Leicas, cause she really wanted to get a Q2. And so she was like, this is where I'm going to go with this. And, anyway, just had this really interesting pathway. And I had done an episode on, you know, sort of the therapeutic effects of photography and mental health and all this, and it resonated with her. But I mean, here she is, an EMT making probably, you know, not a lot of money, you know, down there, and she's working overtime trying to save up $5,000 to buy this camera.
I know.
I was like, man, wouldn't, as the nonprofit guy in me, is just like, what if I was able to build an audience big enough that, you know, we could sort of crowdsource resources to help photographers, like, her name is Taylor, you know, somebody like Taylor, get over that hump and get into the brand. Because like you, I'm looking at the marketing, and I'm sure Jeff Garland is like a great, nice guy and a good actor, and his photography is fine, you know, but it's like, his show at the LA Leica gallery is not necessarily just because he's the most deserving photographer using Leica cameras for that work, you know, for that space. It's because he's a movie star, you know, Lenny Kravitz.
Like the Lenny Kravitz edition.
Yeah, I was going to say the Lenny Kravitz edition. Really, yeah, you know, it's like, okay, you know, my snakeskin brown camera and my snakeskin strap and that. It's like, I'm not, you know, that's not for me, you know, and it is funny that they do that, but it's like, you know, here you have a camera brand that's built on, you know, on working photographers throughout history. And then, you know, it is justifiably, I think, criticized, you know, for like kind of what you had said earlier, you know, like I'd love to see more real work from Leica photographers. And I thought, well, what better way than thinking about getting them into the hands of people that are putting themselves, you know, in the line of danger every day, or that are just doing something worthwhile, then they have the opportunity to take those really interesting photos. I don't know. I just thought maybe that would be kind of a cool sort of theme, is thinking about trying to resonate Leica cameras more with working photographers than necessarily just,
They're so expensive that most working photographers can't afford
them.
I was just,
exactly.
Let's be
honest. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah. If I was just shooting the project that I'm shooting and that kind of worked my entire career, I couldn't buy it. Leica system. The only reason I could buy this Leica system is because I also own a production company and do that kind of work that allows me to afford this kind of stuff. But honestly, like, it's hard. Although I would say, like, if you do think of Leica, if you're into photography, you do think of it like a long-term investment, like I've talked about, like not having to swap out for the latest camera. You even talked about early on, like you don't really need to you don't need to update at all. You don't need to get all this new gear every year. You're locked into that camera ecosystem and the lenses. I mean, yeah, like right. I bought a lens from the 1970s. It's great. You know, they hold their value well and they work well because there's no new technology in them. It's just glass and the metal and it works well. And then that's all that matters. So, you know, if I look at it that way, then I don't need to update the system for a long time. You know, and, because there's no features. Like, what are they going to do? Update the on button?
Right. You know, well, and the idea that you can look back into that back catalog with, you know, any Leica lens. Like, one of the things that's neat about the SL2 is that they said any Leica lens ever made will work on this camera. There's adapters. Every single lens cool, that we have ever made in the entire history of the company will work on this camera. And so then you start thinking about sort of artistic expression, too, because the 50 millimeter lenses from the 60s, you know, versus the 50 millimeter lenses now, you know, there's a lot of choices to be made in there over time. Maybe there's things, you know, that you might find and like, oh man, that 75 millimeter from back then, I really, really love the way that thing looks. You know, that's me.
It's crazy how they hold their value. I mean, if you ever try to sell used Canon stuff, you're like, oh my God, what? That's all I can get for this? I bought that camera for $4,000.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. Yeah, I think it starts with their brand message. And I hope they do. I agree with you. I hope they go back to doing that a little bit more because that's kind of the culture that the camera is built on. So I hope they continue to support. And I will say with me, you know, for my work using the M10D, I think there's not many of us out there using it sort of professionally. So they have been like quite good at featuring my work and putting it out on like the LFI magazine and putting it on their website and different like Instagram. So that's been nice to see that they're supportive of that kind of work because it is, you know, it's different than the celebrities holding the camera and you know, their exhibition of photos they took of themselves at the grand opening for some movie or something. But yeah, I'd like to see more of that stuff, like more photographers doing really long form documentary with it and or just even, you know, conceptual stuff, whatever it is, like just true photographers that are working and putting time into a project, not they spend a day with the Leica. I hope they go into that more. We'll see. Because it does sort of feed into like, okay, it makes it more attainable for your average person to think about like wanting to use that tool, you know, and if they could make it affordable, had some more scholarships. Maybe they do. I don't know. I haven't done enough research, you know, if they have any scholarships or any programs like that. I'm sure they do some things. But I like to see that locally. Whenever I go into the shops around here in Southeast Asia, I tend to see the work on the wall always being like, all right, it's more about the person that did the work than the actual work.
Than the work itself. Oh, totally. Yeah. And you know, the thing is it's the, nowadays the other cameras are getting so much more expensive that eventually they'll catch up, you know, I mean the new Sony and that, I mean, they're $4,500 bodies. The new Canon is a $5,000 body almost here, you know? So it's like, that's only $1,000 less than the SL2. You know, and it's still, you know, and it's mostly made out of plastic, you know, I mean, the camera's plastic, you know, I mean, a lot of it is, it's not, so I don't know.
Well, maybe with this rebirth of film, but it's just funny because even though like a film cameras haven't lost their value, they're still really expensive.
Oh God, I know. I'd love to have like an M6 TTL or something in there. Yeah, forget it. But, you know, it's like you're talking real money, you know, but now that I, you know, have start collecting a couple lenses, you know, maybe you'll find one. I got to go for an M5. That nobody wants the M5, you know, that's
right, there you go.
Yeah, so, well, hey man, no, your approach to things and your work, you know, really resonate with kind of the theme of this. And so, I don't know if you know this, you're my first ever guest. I mean, I've never had a guest on here. So you're
I hope I wasn't too boring for people.
No, hell no. There's so much. We've been talking for an hour and a half, so I'm going to break this up into a few episodes.
Awesome.
And you know, kind of hit on the few different things we talked about. So no, I'm fascinated and I'm going to make sure that people are tuning in and following your work because it's exceptional. It's a lot of fun. And not only that, like your work is worth watching. Your content is worth watching on YouTube and that. And then, you know, I think people that have listened to this will see that your personality really resonates with, if it's fun to listen to, if it's fun to listen to this on the podcast, wait till you, you watch some of Justin's videos. So yeah, start with cocky photographers.
Yeah, it's 7 a.m. here, so I don't get goofy till, well, we start at 7 a.m. I usually get goofy at about 9 or 10 when I start filming after the coffee kicks in. So
there you go.
I was a little bit slow in the beginning. It takes me a little bit
to get my juices going. No, this was great. It was excellent. And I really appreciate your time. And, you know, it would be great if maybe as, you know, you kind of enter into maybe the next phase of Kindred Guardians, maybe we could talk again and you could maybe after like the next time you take a big trip, maybe we could get on and you could tell us about your trip or something, you know, and we could talk about it.
I would love that. Yeah. And I will be filming now that I'm really getting into video and I've really done a deep dive into editing. I will be filming behind the scenes of some of this project as well, just to hopefully not too much where it interferes in the actual work that I'm doing. But I'm trying to allot a day to actually do B-roll. Talk about the project and get really interesting footage on the ground because I think people would like to see what it's like to actually be there with me on a shoot, or be with a professional photographer on a shoot or something. And like to show it in a video way is just another outlet for me. So yeah. And if I could leave people with one message, it's not about me or my work. I would just like to leave people the message is to go work on a personal project that fits your passion and your interest, and allow yourself time to shoot that project and treat it like work, because you'll grow as a photographer.
Excellent. Well, dude, thank you so much for all your time today. And I really look forward to following what goes on next. And maybe a few months down the road, we can talk again. That would be awesome.
That sounds great. Stay in touch. Thank you for having me on today.
Okay, bud. Cool. I'm looking forward to your next video. We'll talk to you soon. All right.
All right. Cool. Take it easy.
Thanks, bye. Man. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, if you made it this long, thanks for staying on. I think that was a riot. I really enjoyed speaking with Justin. And if you have any other ideas for people that we could get in contact with, I've got a wish list of individuals that I think would be great to have here on the podcast. First and foremost would be somebody like Hugh Brownstone. I don't know if you know him. Three Blind Men and an Elephant, a YouTuber. And he does photography around Greater New York and does workshops in that. And he's sort of a Leicophile, although he has a broad knowledge of lots of other camera systems. And you know, I think he's kind of at the scale where we'd be able to get a hold of him probably, but if anybody knows Hugh or has a connection to Hugh or wants to forward this along to him, that would be awesome. But I'm going to try to reach out to him as well. I think he would be a great guest. I think you guys would dig that. And yeah, I don't know, I've got a handful of other ideas and people in mind, but like I said at the beginning of the episode, if you stay tuned, in the next episode we're going to be talking to Taylor. We're going to be talking about L-mount Alliance and third party lenses with Leica systems. And that's about it. So we are going to get out of here right now, and we'll talk to you in the next one. This has been another episode of the Like a New Day podcast. Like a New Day is brought to you by me, Zachary Brannigan. You can find me online at zacharybrannigan.com. You can also find me on Instagram at ZGBRANIGAN. That's at ZGBrannigan. Music was provided by Epidemic Sound, and this is another episode of the Like a New Day podcast. Please feel free to reach out to me via email at ZGBrannigan@gmail.com or send me a private message on Instagram, but please give me a follow there. I love connecting with all of you out in the community. And thanks very much for listening, and I'm looking forward to the next one. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.